Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Gerald Fry, who is a distinguished professor of international and intercultural education at the University of Minnesota. He served as a Peace Corps volunteer in Thailand and went on to do doctoral work in international development education. He wrote the recently published definitive book on Thailand, A Historical Dictionary of Thailand, and is currently working on a book called The Thais, The Bamboo and the Lotus. Welcome to Background Briefing, Gerald Fry.
Good to be with you again.
And the coup now in Thailand has been officially announced as you know, they've acknowledged what it is. It was clearly a coup from the beginning. The military were a little churlish about calling it a coup, but now they're calling it a full-blown coup. And this is one of many, isn't it?
Yes, this is the 12th successful coup since the shift to a constitutional monarchy in 1932. There have been a total of 23 attempted coups, and this one was the 12th, which was successful, and apparently without any loss of life or bloodshed. Many of the Thai coups, in fact, the great majority of Thai coups, have been very peaceful.
But this one, some of them have been, most of them have been in the real world in terms of democracy. None of them are justified. And most of them haven't been justified, but this one arguably could be justified because the red shirts and the yellow shirts seem to have completely polarized the country. They have armed encampments, and they're ready to do battle on the street. So it seems like some adult supervision was necessary.
I think the military was very patient. This has been going on now since November. And the economic consequences are increasingly negative for Thailand and its economy, its tourist sector, with this political instability, a government that was a caretaker government with no parliament that really could not act decisively on matters. So I think the military was reluctant to act, and then they had 2 days of discussions after the declaration of martial law to try to reach a compromise to move forward, and I think they stepped in, and I think probably many of the people in Bangkok, especially those of elite background, are probably happy. This is seen as a victory for Suthep and the protesters, and they represented not the majority of Thai voters, and that's the sad part of this. It's not democratic, but on the other hand, they call themselves the National Peace and Order Maintaining Council, so hopefully this will mean a peaceful situation. And then I think how the Reds will react, the red shirts who are obviously very disappointed. I had many emails this morning from friends in the northeast of Thailand who were very disappointed with this coup d'etat. But I think a lot will depend on how the new council, the military council, what kind of government it installs and whether it represents both sides of the political divide.
So the government then of the former Prime Minister, Yingluck Shinawatra, who is the sister of the exiled billionaire former Prime Minister, right, Thaksin Shinawatra, and they represent the Reds, who and their political base is in the north and in the country, and the Yellows are in the rest of the country, particularly in the urban areas. They tend to be the more educated at least if that's the best way to describe it. And you're suggesting that they're the beneficiaries of this coup and that the people, the red shirts, are disappointed. Is there any likelihood that the military will try and install a yellow shirt government?
If they do that, that's going to be a huge mistake. And these days, actually, the people that wore yellow shirts before are not wearing yellow shirts anymore, and so that's the group, but they're now wearing white, and a lot of the colors of Thai nationalism, red, white, and blue, so they've changed they don't really wear the yellow shirts anymore, but it's basically the same group. People who tend to be of not always, but often of elite background, highly educated, though many of the people in the north and northeast now are also well-educated, so it's a mistake to consider them. Charles Kies just wrote a wonderful book about the northeast, Finding Their Voice, which points out how the people in the North and Northeast are now much more educated and cosmopolitan.
So then what are the divides between the Reds and the Yellows? What distinguishes one from the other?
I think, the polarizing issue is Dr. Thaksin and his sister Yingluck and the Pheu Thai Party. The many people in the North and Northeast, and that's the large majority of the Thai country, support Dr. Thaksin and Yingluck and their populist policies. Many people in Bangkok, people in the upper part of the South, on the other hand, don't like, they just hate, have tremendous contempt for Thaksin and his sister, and find him very corrupt, highly critical of the Western media for overlooking the corruption and many of the, what they consider, bad aspects of Dr. Thaksin and his sister Yingluck. So many Thais are upset with the Western media coverage. But as I said, I got many emails this morning from close friends in the Northeast who are very, they said this was a really sad day in Thai history.
Again, I'm speaking with Gerald Fry, who's a distinguished professor of international and intercultural education at the University of Minnesota. He served as a Peace Corps volunteer in Thailand and went on to do doctoral work in international development education. He wrote the recently published definitive book on Thailand, A Historical Dictionary of Thailand, and is currently working on a book called The Thais, The Bamboo, and The Lotus. So to get an idea of Thaksin and his sister, whose government is basically been overthrown by the military, to understand these passionate feelings for and against him. When you say he's a populist, he's also a billionaire. Is he kind of a liberal version of Rupert Murdoch?
It's hard to describe him. He's clearly a populist, has carried out many, many populist policies. Which people in the North and Northeast, many people in the Northeast have very much liked. But the people protesting in Bangkok, the group you described as Yellow Shirts, really have tremendous contempt for Thaksin and his sister Yingluck and the Pheu Thai Party that represents their interest.
But doesn't he have huge media holdings among others? And what's the status of his television network?
Oh, he came to wealth through his dynamic activities as an entrepreneur, a business tycoon in the telecommunications area. And I think many of his telecommunication businesses are still operating and very successful.
But are they able to operate? When I use the Rupert Murdoch analogy, that he's a liberal Rupert Murdoch, is he able to operate a liberal Fox News in Thailand?
I think in terms of his populist policies, I would just describe them basically as very populist. There was the health scheme with universal health care available for minimal cost. There was one scholarship for every sub-district in Thailand for the brightest kid in that district to have the chance to study abroad. Then there was this rice pledging scheme, which was very populist, but there were flaws in its implementation, which got Yingluck in trouble. Also, by the way, I was just in Thailand, and Yingluck had already been deposed by a judicial coup d'etat. For her, she and nine of her cabinet members had violated the Constitution, so she was no longer a prime minister when this coup occurred. It was another member of her political party, his name is Niewit Tamrong, who was the prime minister, caretaker prime minister, who was overthrown by this military coup.
So just to try and pin down the objections and the yellow shirts, even though now they're wearing the more patriotic red, white, and blue colors. And of course, we know that the royal family has an immense influence in Thailand, to the extent that there are even laws against insulting the royal family. And when you talk about Thaksin and his deposed sister as populists, isn't there, at the end of the day, they have more supporters than the so-called yellow shirts, don't they?
Oh yeah, they every election that's been held since 2001. The people supporting Thaksin or Yingluck, they've won every election, and one of the elections was the biggest landslide in the history of Thai politics. So these populist policies have been very popular in the North and Northeast. And also, people forget there are also many people in Bangkok of working-class background or maybe even lower middle-class background, and people in eastern Rayong, for example, eastern Thailand, who are also very supportive of the Yingluck and Toxin. So, it's not just the people in the north and northeast. And also there are people, I interviewed a woman in Chiang Mai who I expected, because she was from Chiang Mai, would be very supportive of Toxin and Yingluck, and she was not at all supportive. But so there's a lot of, there's more diversity among both camps than people realize.
But if the populists, the red shirts, have the majority and have popular policies, and the military is sort of, you know, siding, at least not overtly, but siding with the yellow shirts, do they represent then the kind of conservative reactionary forces? Certainly the military does, but would that be the way to try and, you know, characterize the polarization?
Well, I think what's going to happen is we're going to have to watch very carefully the nature of the government appointed, the nature of the constitution drafted, and the kinds of reforms they carry out. To what extent, if they're clearly just favoring the so-called yellow shirts, and then there could be some very strong reaction from the red shirts.
And
so we don't know yet how they're going to act. I would hope in 2006, after their military coup, they appointed a cabinet that's been called Old Ginger. They were older people and did not gain a great deal of respect throughout the country. So I hope this new prime minister and this new cabinet will hopefully be very committed to be very honest, have great integrity, and really have a cabinet represents both sides of the political arena.
But it would seem to me that Thaksin is not going to go away, and his popularity and his sister's popularity. He's in exile, is he not?
He's in exile. And I think the military have asked all the Putai, the current cabinet ministers, to report to this military peace and order maintaining council. And so they were asked to report to them. And I think the leaders of the other side have also been asked to report. So my guess is those people will be released. I noticed that one person associated with the red shirts, the army had come to her house, and that the father of that family is now under detention by the military. There's great concern about, especially my friends in the media, about the clampdown and the censoring of the media, control of the media, the suspension of the Constitution. There cannot be any meetings of people, of any groups greater than five people, for example.
Well, Gerald Fry, thank you very much for joining us here today.
It's good to be with you, and I hope somehow this is resolved peacefully, and that the new government is going to be a government that represents Thai people broadly.
Well, I share those sentiments, and I thank you again, Gerald Fry.
Okay, thanks for inviting me. Bye.
Bye. Again, I've been speaking with Gerald Fry, who's a distinguished professor of international and intercultural education at the University of Minnesota. He served as a Peace Corps volunteer in Thailand and went on to do doctoral work in international development education. He wrote the recently published definitive book on Thailand, A Historical Dictionary of Thailand, and is currently working on a book called The Thais, The Bamboo, and The Lotus. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back looking into the failure of talks between the political opposition and the government of Venezuela amid increasingly violent political protests.